Oh, dude, I really was rationing the chocolate, and like they'd be like, "Oh, the chocolate's all gone." I'd be like, "Damn it, yeah, it's all gone. Bummer." Meanwhile, I had 3 bars in the back of the freezer.
You're evil.
Hey, it was every man for themselves up on that hill.
Hello, and welcome back to The Food Fix, the show where we talk to whoever Cassidy wants to talk to, as long as we're talking about innovative ways to better feed the world, of course. If I had bonus episodes on this podcast, then this would definitely be one of them, because it's like almost a little too fun and would be reserved for like Patreon subscribers if I had those. But compliments are currency in Food Fix world, so just make sure you guys give me some feedback on this episode and we'll call it even. So I'm talking to my dear friend Helen this week, and it's extra fun because we reference back to 2 past episodes. So if you haven't listened to my woofing episode from a couple weeks ago, you definitely should do that before this episode. But also, if you've listened to my permaculture episode from way back, then you'll have even more context. So do with that what you will. So Helen's a real life woofer, or was a woofer, I should say, and she had quite the experience. But just to be clear, I called her up not to bash on WWF, because we have both agreed that WWF is an awesome organization with an important mission and they're doing really great things. But I think this episode does a really good job at shedding light on how much farm labor just sucks. It's a hard job that often requires you to work in like comedically awful conditions. And I'm only laughing because Helen is fine and okay, and also my friend, and I'm allowed to laugh at her. So this week we're talking about problems with workaway programs by discussing a woofing situation gone wrong. And then towards the end, Helen will recommend ways that we can address those issues. Now, I want to give a serious preface. Farming has a long, horrible history, and it has not been resolved. You can Google and find all kinds of stories about immigrant workers being worked quite literally to death for little to no money in far worse conditions than we'll describe in today's show. And I just want to make it clear in this episode that I'm not commenting on that specific issue. I would not dare compare my farming experience or Helen's to anything like that. We always had the power to walk away and leave if the conditions became too much to handle, and Helen did. And we're very privileged to have had that kind of autonomy, but many, many people all around the world, including the U.S., do not. But that's a whole separate episode or series of episodes, potentially, if that's something people are interested in learning more about. Anyways, now that that is cleared up, we are talking about workaway programs that people sign up for with the knowledge that they will not be getting paid in money, but in lodging, food, cultural experiences, and mostly character building, honestly. But as we will find out, that promise of an equal exchange between worker and host is not always exactly equal. So we're going to talk to Helen, who has previously worked in Hawaii and is currently doing another workaway where she's working at a hostel in Hawaii. Yeah, believe it or not, even Hawaii can suck, as we'll learn today. All right, let's go laugh or or sympathize, rather, with Helen Josephson as we hear about her experience working on a permaculture farm in Hawaii.
Well, my name's Helen. Currently, I'm working at a hostel on the North Shore of Oahu right now, and I'm a recent Michigan State grad, and I was once a woofer.
So, Helen, you have no agriculture experience prior to this. You didn't study anything agriculture related. So why did you woof in the first place?
Yeah, so really, I just literally Googled, how can I live in Hawaii for free on the internet? And a ton of sketchy things came up on Craigslist. And then I saw this thing called woofing. And I was like, well, that seems like a little less sketchy. It was like, well, I'm either going to be here in my small town of Michigan for the summer, bored out of my mind, or I can go try something new and be on a beach for the summer. And to me, it seemed like an obvious choice. I mean, I just kind of came out here to get a little bit of a new perspective on life and the world. And yeah, it was my first time coming out here, and it was very, very life changing. And then I loved the area so much, so I decided to come back this summer, and I'm still here.
All right, so going forward, let's just all keep in mind that this was almost a far worse Craigslist horror story, but luckily, she chose Woof. So you get to Hawaii. You show up to this farm. So set the scene for us.
Yeah, so I was in Pupukea on the North Shore of Oahu. It's one of the islands in Hawaii. And I was there for about a month. I was supposed to be there for 2 to 3 months, but I lasted about a month. And it was a permaculture farm. And basically what I understood from that, again, having no knowledge of it before going into that, was in the simplest terms, it's a way for like a system to be self-sufficient in that it helps its neighboring plants and each other grow. So if one plant needs to be in the shade, they would plant that plant next to a tall plant because it provided shade. And it's just like a way of it being a little bit more self-sustainable.
We grew a ton of things, lots of fruits. We're in a tropical environment, so it was mostly tropical fruits. We had mangoes, a lot of different like tangerines, like a lot of different limes, lemons, papaya, pineapple, coconuts, a lot of bananas. But then you also had all your ground vegetables too. So you had cucumbers, zucchini, lettuce, kale, beets. And then one of my favorite things was the edible flowers. And I'd say the work was pretty physical because of the heat just alone. It really takes a lot out of you, but you're just weeding for a really long time in the sun. You have to carry like big buckets of produce. I think one of like the heaviest things and like the physicality wise was setting up for farm stand. They had like this ancient farm table. It was like this, they refused to replace it. That thing had to weigh like 60 pounds. And it was the dumbest thing because it was just this massive table. That was probably the most physically induced stress I had working on the farm, but just a lot of tedious weeding and positions can be kind of awkward.
And I was living in the backyard of the farmer's property in a converted shipping container, which was interesting. There was an outdoor shower. There was no plumbing, so we had to use the restroom in a bucket and then compost with it. That was also quite a shock for me. And we were all the way up the hill. So every day that I wanted to go to the beach, I had to walk a couple miles down this hill, but it was a great location because we were so close to the water, and it's called the 7 Mile Miracle out here. So I was working about, I think it was 5 days a week, 6:30 in the morning until 12:30, 1 p.m. So about 6 hour days. And supposedly all the food was supposed to be included as well in that exchange of time, as well as like the ability to live there for free. So,
all right, so much to unpack here. Living in a shipping container, pooping in a bucket, showering outside. This is a lot. Back in my farm days, I lived in a shed and had a designated pee hole outside. So this really brought me back. But anyways, I got to first dig into that last point that you made. You said all the food was supposed to be included. Was it not?
It's a bit of a gray area. For me, based on the description online, I don't think that we got all the food that we were promised. Most of the time, we were only allowed to take produce from the farm that would not sell on the Saturday farm stand and that would not last to be sold at the next Saturday farm stand. So we got mostly, I would say, kale, which is great, but that's not enough to sustain yourself when you're farming for 6 hours a day. We had like a food bank coming and bringing us food. So that's like one of those things you got to really like look at when you do woofing, is like kind of have someone check it out for you before you go. But yeah, that's a bit of a gray area.
I'm sorry. The food bank was donating food to you on your farm.
Yeah. It was a little interesting. We had to have someone It was like a thing. We all looked forward to it. I think it was on like Wednesdays or something, but it was like the food day. And we someone would have to be there to receive the box. Otherwise we'd get skipped. And it was like bread, eggs. My favorite one time, oh my God, we got this dark chocolate. Oh my God. I like hid that from all my roommates. I took way more than what we divided up and I would hide it in the back of the freezer. And like, I would ration that until I left for the week because like it just, it was a lot. And I felt bad taking like food from the community. I didn't really feel good about it. So that's one of the reasons why I decided to leave a little early.
Now, once we put aside the hilarious image of Helen stashing chocolate rations in the back of the freezer, let's just take a second to process how wild this all is. The food bank was donating food to the farm. That's crazy. I've never heard anything like this before among any of my friends who have farmed. What a mess. But Helen, I gotta ask now, what would you say was the worst part of your experience on the farm?
That's a tough question. There are so many different options. I would say having no plumbing wasn't really the worst, but it was the most shocking. Like having to compost myself was like, okay, that's kind of a lot. Worst thing was the, I would say, unfairness of the exchange of my hours for what I was receiving. a lot of times people can get taken advantage of in woofing situations because, you know, you're in this beautiful place and people kind of forget that they're being overworked or they're not getting the food they were promised and they're having to take from a community food bank. Like that was probably one of the worst things for me, was realizing I was getting taken advantage of and not necessarily being super passionate about the farming itself. So it made it even harder for me to overlook that we were working like 6.5 hour days weeding and then not getting enough food really in compensation for that. Yeah, I'd say that's probably the worst part about it.
Yeah, this was the answer I expected. Farm labor is crazy. And even in paid gigs like I did, it never felt like I was being compensated enough. But that's another topic. Anyways, Helen, it would simply be bad reporting if I didn't pry further on your toilet situation. Please do tell.
Yeah, so we literally had a bucket in a little tiny shed and you'd have to put like a little layer of mulch down and then you'd literally poop and then you have to take mulch and cover it again for the next person. And then it would just sit there overnight until the bucket was full enough. Then you had to seal the bucket and then you had to take the bucket over to the farm where we had a compost pile going and you would chuck it and clean it out all on the farm, like the little pile they had there in the little section. And then you would get all the buckets at once, dump them all out and then clean them. And then we had to take them all back and prep them with all new mulch on the bottom. So yeah, you couldn't pee in the bucket because it would get too heavy. So we literally would just drop in the backyard and just start peeing. And they all had these very open backyard section. So that was also quite interesting and different.
You're welcome. I know you guys were all dying to know that. In my day, we used to drop trout right in the middle of the fields. Good natural fertilizer. I'm just kidding. But as we know from my very first episode, that wouldn't be a totally crazy idea. Anyways, Helen, what was the best part of your woofing experience?
Yeah, no, I have a lot of good experiences. I learned a lot. Like when I came back home, I was really inspired to kind of start my own planting. Like I started trying to grow my own mint. I started trying to grow some sunflowers. Like I just kind of started taking more pride in like growing things myself because I realized how much more like efficient it was. And I also learned a little bit about, I don't know how to describe this. There's like a drip line.
Drip line is like a hose that runs the whole length of your field and waters the plants. Anyways.
And so when that drip line gets hit with like a tool, like if you're weeding, I learned how to like splice it so I could like cut it and like splice it with a connector again. And I felt like really official. And I tried to like do like little handiwork stuff when I came home after learning how to do that. And honestly, just being with the people, we got really close. That was probably one of my favorite parts, is getting to meet all these different people and learning about their background, and then not only just learning about them, but being forced to share a shipping container with them every night and and go to work together every day. And also just being in Hawaii, I'd say was probably the best part about it.
Yeah, I'm sure being in Hawaii definitely does sweeten the pot a little bit. Wonder if she would have stayed for a whole month had the farm been in the middle of Ohio. But anyways, Helen, tell us about what you learned from this experience. Would you say you came out a changed person?
I definitely would say I came out of this experience as a different person. This really made me appreciate having less, like having... This was like for the chocolate, whatever I had, I really cherished. And I was really thankful for definitely plumbing when I came home. But I really learned that agriculture is a lot bigger than what I originally had thought. Like the importance of farm to table things, I did not realize before coming. Like we were a huge caterer for all the downtown restaurants. Every Saturday, they would go take a delivery to town, and it would be like all of the plants that I personally like harvested and weeded and took care of for all these weeks. And to like be able to see that come to fruition really was inspiring for me to realize like how important it is to grow your own stuff. And also just the amount of hard work it takes and the dedication and the time to nurture something in the ground to putting it on someone's plate, if not your own, was really inspiring for me. And I definitely would say I have a little bit more of a green thumb after that. But yeah, it's taught me a lot about being thankful for what I have and the conditions that I get to live in, and really appreciation to all the farmers and agriculture out there.
Yeah, farm labor is intense, and I'm glad you were able to gain a new appreciation for it through woofing. But I gotta ask, would you ever woof again? And would you recommend it to others?
I definitely think it's a great experience for people who are looking to get into agriculture. And honestly, everybody, I think everyone needs a little bit of a, I don't want to say wake up call, but a little bit of a, okay, like here's something that you have to be thankful for. So I think everyone should do something like this in their lifetime. It completely changed my life. Like I said, I'm sure you could ask anyone that would know me. No one would say that Helen Josephson, after graduating, was going to be living in a hostel, just kind of hanging out. It completely made me realize that there's so much more to life than just going to the next job, to the next internship, whatever. It really makes you appreciate the earth, the small things, and just how connected you can be to nature and in an environment. Yeah, I would suggest something like this experience to just about anybody.
So something I grappled with after farming, long after, was how much can you really blame the farm owner? Do you sympathize with your boss at all now, or do you mostly still blame him? Have you ever thought about that?
No, I thought about it a lot, but honestly, any work away, the chances and likelihood that you are going to get taken advantage of, especially when you're in these tropical situations where you're kind of distracted by, oh, the ocean, you're going to get taken advantage of because they're going to use you more than you can use them. That's just the way it is. You're there for a place to stay, but they're using you for their whole livelihood. It just wasn't enough people. It wasn't enough support. And then for us to not get to like pick whatever food we wanted from the farm, like we wanted a cucumber or a zucchini or something one day, and he made a point to come all the way down to our little shipping container in our outdoor kitchen and ask for the zucchini back. Like it just like we were getting taken advantage of. And honestly, I know that he didn't have the financial means necessarily to possibly have more workers that were paid, but unfortunately, that shouldn't come at our expense. And to come on a promise that we're going to get food from the farm, we're going to have bread and all this stuff, why am I taking from the community food bank? That to me, that was just, this is not fair. And now it's bleeding in and taking from the community, which is also not fair. So
excellent points. The zucchini thing is really crazy. I would have lost my mind. So what do you think is the solution? How can WOOF and other workaway programs improve, in your opinion?
Apparently, on the WOOFing platform, a representative goes out and verifies that it is indeed a farm. I feel like as an agency, they should be taking more prerogative to like keep checking, like how are they running their farm? Like, is it humane? Is it equitable? Is it fair? Like, are they feeding their employees? To have just one check and be done. I don't think that's enough. I don't know if they continue and like look to see if they are like running efficiently and effectively and fairly, but that's definitely something the wolfing platform should definitely work on. But there's so many farms and there's like probably never going to be enough people to constantly check on the farms as much as they should, but it's also the responsibility of the farmer. I mean, you know, it's not free labor. Like it's supposed to be an equal trade. And we just at the hostel, honestly, this morning, we're short staffed at the hostel. And so we were trying to find somebody. And one of my managers or my boss was like, the owner was like, yeah, like there's these two girls from a farm that are about done with it. And they want to come volunteer because they can't take the farm anymore. And I'm like, sounds about right. Because it ruins the concept of agriculture and permaculture and farming for all these people that have never farmed or have any experience and are wanting to learn something new, when they kind of run these people dry in unfair situations, just with the distractions of, oh, you're right next to a beach or, oh, you, whatever, it really leaves a bad taste in the mouth of a lot of the woofers. And I don't know, I would hope that wouldn't necessarily be the case, because the whole point is supposed to educate and inspire these people to maybe go start their own little farms and gardens and have more appreciation for it. So I don't know.
Thank you, Helen. I loved getting your insider perspective. Lastly, I just want to know, for anybody thinking about trying wolfing out or any workaway really, what are your expert recommendations?
I mean, I know it sounds a little daunting to do like the whole wolfing stuff, because a lot of this seem to bring up a lot of like the negatives, which I think they're more like criticisms that could easily be fixed if there was attention brought to them. I definitely think it's an experience for everyone. I would say be safe about it. And I would do a video chat with the person owning the farm before you commit to going there. And if they have a problem with that, don't go, because there's no reason why they should have a problem with that. And I would ask for references and see if has anyone worked here in the past, or is there anyone working there now that I can get in contact with? And you can use that as a guise to like text and be like, yo, so like, what's up with this farm? Like, is it worth it? Is it good? Like, are you guys getting fed? Stuff like that. It's a pros and cons wherever farm you pick, but I definitely would be safe about it and do your research ahead of time.
Well, there you have it. The reality of farm labor. You know, in hindsight, I have so many people I could have interviewed for this episode, and I might elaborate on this point further in the future. But for now, I hope if nothing else, you've gained a little bit more respect for whoever is growing your food after listening to this episode. And also, I hope you learned that farming builds character. Actually, most importantly, just remember that you do not want Helen on your apocalypse team, because she will hoard all the chocolate. All right. Thank you, Helen. You're the best. Also, guys, Helen is an author and she's got this beautiful book of poems called When the Tides Roll In. It's on Amazon, but it's under her pen name, AJ Peters. But just keep the cat in the bag. All right. Anyways, I'll link the episode in the description. If you liked this episode, please leave me some stars. I want to have an official rating on Spotify, please. If you like the music on this episode, then thank the Freezer Bees by checking out their music. And since I like the Night Center, I'm going to thank them for employing me. So thank you. And email me at msufoodfix@gmail.com. Please, I want to chit chat. Give me some story ideas. Okay, all done. Thanks for hanging in there. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'll see you all next week. Until then, I've been your host, Cassidy Huff.